everybody, and welcome to the RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars 4 Recap here on Reality TV Wrap-Ups. Dearly beloved, we come here to eulogize this past episode, talk through all the beats and the mystery end to this episode, much like the mystery end that befell Lady Bunny, her subsequent resurrection, and then subsequent second death, I suppose. Brent Wolgamont, have you pulled out the veil for this occasion?
That would be a good idea. I was going to tell you at the beginning of the podcast that, Mike, the podcast has already been invented. Just do your own podcast. Like, just don't overthink it.
Yeah, exactly. That lovely nugget of wisdom that naturally makes you overthink it when you tell someone not to overthink it.
Yeah, I'm like, I thought it was really good wisdom. And I'm like, okay, I'm with you now. And then, like, she totally blew it. Trinity, I'm talking about.
Well, Liana, Boris, I hope you've enjoyed our new outfitted bathrooms in our podcast studio. Our bathroom attendant is just in the mirror if you need to ask her for anything.
Oh my gosh, can you imagine? It's like, what's the, when you say the name three times in the mirror,
Bloody Mary.
Appears, Bloody Mary, yeah, like Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary, I need a mint.
Is that Manila's nickname for her her shelves runway last episode, Bloody Mary?
That's too risque. We can't say that on this podcast.
Yeah, Monet can say the C word, but we can't talk about that.
No feminine hygiene.
Well, let's get into this episode because despite, spoiler alert, there not being an elimination at the end of this episode, but a bevy of things to get set up, there's still a lot of stuff going on in this hour and a half as the queens are tasked to do a roast slash eulogy for Lady Bunny. But before, unlike Michael Jackson, we start with the woman in the mirror. Let's go back to the beginning of the episode here because we talk about the fallout post Latrice's elimination. And maybe I've sort of become like a Manila apologist just because I love her so much. But it seemed like the story in this first segment was focused a lot around like, ooh, Manila's being real shady with wanting to get rid of Monet. And it seemed like the girls were giving her the cold shoulder. And now she's this big old wild card because she didn't get rid of someone due to their quote unquote report card. That doesn't hold water to me. Again, I might be coming
from... It doesn't hold water to me either. No, this was so tired. This was convoluted. I felt like my honest opinion in watching this was like the editors were looking for something to make up some drama. Like, I can't really believe that they felt this way. Like, I have to believe that behind the scenes they were like, we get it, girl. We get it. We get it. You know, like, we understood. And I never felt like there was anything coming from Manila's corner shady at all. I never felt that way. And I really don't believe that these... Like, here's the thing. I think these queens are smart. And because of that, I think you're, like... You're not giving the audience enough credit when you edit the show in such a way that makes it look like they're kind of dumb. Like, I was listening to Monet going like, girl, she's shady. I'm like, you don't really believe that, do you? Like, there's... Leon, are you with me on this?
Yeah, I definitely see where you guys are coming from. For me, I think it was a joke that I saw on Reddit that really sort of summed up the whole situation. It was, you know, like Monet's mother gave birth to, or Manila's mother versus, you know, Monet or something like that. And it was like, oh my gosh, how could she send her own mother home? I mean, I guess she's not Sarah Easton, but it was, you know, oh my gosh, the gall that she wouldn't judge based on this report card when, you know, I think you can make an argument that, you know, they were close-ish. It wasn't a complete runaway.
Yeah, I didn't understand that either. Yeah, what can we, Mike, can we go back to this report card, whatever the hell it was? Like, so Monet was in the bottom once, and Latrice was in the bottom once, but she also had a bottom three, but there was also another point in time where I thought Monet was in the bottom three. Like, just because she had a win, like, she was outscoring Latrice. Like, this was really close. Like, they made it seem like somebody had, you know, A minuses and the other person had Fs, and it was nothing of the kind.
Yeah, I think it was, at least from the last episode, the general consensus among the queens themselves was like, oh, between the actual Jersey Justice and the runway, Latrice was by far the worst, which we had talked about, we sort of agreed with last time, and how Monet was just sort of like six, and there had to be a bottom two, so maybe they were sort of going by that logic as well. But yeah, this whole idea of the report card, I would say... Resume is to modern Survivor as report card is now apparently to RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars. And I commend Manila for just being like, screw it. I'm going to go by my own logic. And the fact of the matter is, and we'll see this later on when there are four queens in the bottom who have all sort of like averaged out to the same thing. That logic only takes you, what, like three, four eliminations in at most.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I think what, to me, was the most interesting about this was the two confessionals, one from Monique, who is, you know, essentially saying, look, I didn't save her because she was my friend. I don't love her that much. That confessional, and then Manila's confessional about it's easy to be fair or say you're coming across as fair when your friend is the one who maybe did better on paper based on this report card. So I thought that was really interesting, but I don't think it was as black and white as they seem to make it out to be.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to throw too much shade on to Monique, but I have a feeling if it was Monet and, like, Valentina in the bottom two, I think there were very few circumstances where Monique would send Monet home above somebody else. Just because I think that's totally fine. We watched a whole season of All-Stars where Rolaska talks, where Alaska and Detox essentially was dragging Roxy Andrews to the top four because they knew they had someone reliable in their corner where if they did end up in the top, there's a chance they're not going to get rid of them. So it did feel a bit cold, and I agree with you, Brent, a bit unusual. I am happy that Monet sort of has her redemptive moment later on when Manila's explaining her logic a bit more before the roast itself, when she says, okay, now I may be understanding things. But it felt a bit weird to just sort of like tease this out when really it was one of the more emotionally driven moments rather than a logically driven moment. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Give credit to the emotion. I would have rather seen them talking for 3 minutes about how hard it was for Manila to face the fact that her friend Latrice is going to go home. Not 3 minutes of fake, we're outraged about the fact that Manila wanted to keep Latrice. Like, that was a bad choice.
Oh my God. I think in terms of the editing, the thing that made me laugh the most was when they're sitting on the couch and Manila goes to get up and she's very emotional and she kind of looks back at the other queens like, okay, aren't we all done now? And all the queens just stare at her. And I'm sure what took 1 second was edited out to be this like 10 second shot of every single queen looking shady. Like, what are you doing? We're all against you.
Oh, I could imagine that. I mean, if the queens had replied with, do I have something on my face? I think that just would have made it even better. Yeah. So we move into the next day here. Rue doing his best Asia O'Hara references with the butterflies all over his jacket with the rose-colored glasses. And we are going for Roast 3.0 here, albeit in maybe a different shade as of where we're going to black as Lady Bunny has passed. Rue talks a bit about her history with Lady Bunny. Actually, there was an article posted on newnownext.com where, for those of you who don't necessarily know, you know, who Lady Bunny is and her involvement with RuPaul and the community specifically, you can check that out. I believe Lady Bunny was on maybe earlier this year on What's the Tea with Ru and Michelle, especially where she goes into a bit of their history together. Liana, what are your thoughts about Lady Bunny and her as a roast subject before we get into the roast proper?
Oh, I thought it was fun. You know, I thought that Lady Bunny is somebody who has been incorporated into Drag Race from the beginning, either through just off comments and references. So, you know, it wasn't something that was, you know, oh my gosh, why are they doing a roast / eulogy of this person? You know, so I felt it was very much within the zeitgeist and I think it made sense. But just real quick, I want to go back to the fact that what you mentioned, Mike, about Rue wearing the butterfly suit at the funeral. I don't know. Somehow I like read between the lines, made this up in my head. This was the death of Asia O'Hara.
Imagine that would have been interesting considering that I think Monique and Monet would have had a huge leg up, but it would have been super random. But I don't know. We're slowly going through like the repertoire here, Brent, where we did Rue, we did Michelle, we did Lady Bunny. I don't know if Ross or Carson, if there's enough, you know, leaves on that branch to really cover things. Maybe we'll do like the roast of Alyssa Edwards next time this comes around.
Yeah, I think that's probably where it's headed. I mean, like the show is very meta right now. And like we know all these characters, we've grown up with these characters. The show's been on like, God, it feels like this show started like, I think the first or second year that Jay and I were together. Like, I mean, this is really insane. Like, I remember being in me and Jay's first house watching, like, the first or second season of RuPaul's Drag Race, trying to get him to watch the show. That's my partner, by the way, for those of you who don't know. And, I feel like at this point, it's, like I said before, I said this last week, I feel like RuPaul's Drag Race, now it's his 14th season, because there's been 10 regular seasons, 4 All-Star seasons. Like, seriously... it's entered the section of Survivor where it starts laughing at itself more. And I really do. I totally think that Ross and Carson could be right up coming down the line in season 11 or season 12.
I want it to be Todrick Hall just so we can make fun of Todrick Hall.
Oh, boy. Well, and fun fact, Brent, I believe next month, only a few weeks from when we're recording this, marks the 10-year anniversary of Drag Race's premiere. So
yay!
That's a nice, fun moment for all of us to look in the mirror before Lady Bunny pops up in it and just sort of take a good hard look at ourselves for watching 10 years of RuPaul's Drag Race. Before we get into the roast proper, because we do get, you know, some rehearsal stuff, but I feel like that sort of culminates in the actual performances themselves. I do want to talk about a few things. First, even though the late Lady Bunny has passed, we have seen the resurrection of something, ladies and gentlemen. For the first time this season, the walkthroughs are finally back. Albeit only a few people checked in with Rue, but Liana, how did you feel about actually seeing Rue check in with these contestants for the first time this season?
I guess I had forgotten that they hadn't done that.
Right.
So I don't know what that says about that segment, whether or not I think it's important or not. Obviously not. I thought the biggest takeaway for me was Rue just laughing so hard at Manila. And I was like, are you doing this to mess with the other queens, like to get them to step their game up? It felt very over the top. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Manila that funny.
I actually did feel like Manila was funny. Like I was like cackling with Rue there. So I didn't feel like she was making it up, but I did feel like the other queens were a little psyched out by it.
Yeah. How did we feel about, you know, Monique as the winner of the challenge gets the all important role of deciding who goes when? And actually, if you think back to season 3, this was one of the many nails in Manila's coffin during the stand up challenge where Shangela, you know, had gotten word that Manila was intimidated by her. So she says, all right, you're going to go right after me. And as a result, Shangela did pretty damn well and Manila, not so much. Monique sort of does a similar thing here with putting Manila, or in her eyes, putting Manila last, which puts the world's amount of pressure on her. She is able to succeed where she wasn't able to before and do well. Liana, any thoughts about Monique's strategy here in terms of determining the order, specifically what was pointed towards Manila's direction?
Well, it was when I first saw the order, I was like, okay, this makes sense. You start with Monet, you end with Manila, people who are, you know, sort of good at that stand-up type of comedy. And then I forgot that Trinity was bad because I was like, why would you want to go after Trinity? Trinity's funny. You know, that's like her thing this season is, oh, she's the funny queen now, or she's discovered that she can be funny. And then I was like, oh, that's why. Because she's not. I thought she should have gone after Naomi.
Yeah, that's a good point. Brent, did you have any thoughts about the order of maybe looking back in the performances, what should have been?
Nah, I really feel like this is overblown. I feel like, again, this is, I don't mean to harp on this, but I do feel like sometimes they just, the editors fixate on things that are like really like insignificant to the audience. I don't give a shit who's going first, second, third, fourth. If this person going sixth or seventh, going after who, just go out there and do the show. Go out there and do the damn show. If you can go out there and make me laugh, then I think RuPaul is going to be happy. I don't think RuPaul gives a shit about the fact whether you go first, second, or seventh. Who the hell cares? Sorry.
Well, before we get into the roast, I do want to speak briefly about our guest judges, specifically one. I was super pumped to see Cecily Strong and Nevut Nicole Brown guesting on this episode. Not only are they both very pertinent, you know, I'm a huge SNL fan and I loved Community as well. And I'm so happy to see Cecily's increased involvement as well in terms of being the person to sort of fluff up their material, you know, depending on how much they took her feedback in the course of rehearsal. I would say personally, I think that this is yet another group of two judges that I would absolutely love to see back. Cecily in particular, you could tell she was living her fullest when out on the runway, when she was throwing out all those puns alongside the judges. So I love them both here. Brent, did you have any thoughts about these two?
Yeah, I thought this worked really well. Like, I remember 5 minutes ago with Liana bringing up Todrick Hall. I mean, this was the opposite of Todrick Hall because Cecily had such a good time on the runway. She was like talking like she was friends with the queens. Like I'm here to help you. I'm not here to judge you. I'm here to help you. Like, let's see what we can do to punch up your material. And no, that doesn't work. And yes, this works. But you know, hey, like, try some stuff out on me. Like, you know, I felt like every part of this was a working segment for me in a way that it worked for me, but also a working segment in terms of it's part of the show. And I do feel like they were actually getting something done and it was really, really fun to see. So yes, everything about this I thought was great. I thought Cecily was great. The funny part is the only thing I know Yvette Nicole Brown from, because I'd never watched Community, she played Ursula on Once Upon a Time, and I thought she was going to come back, and she did. Like, and then they eventually had Regina play Ursula. But she's also guest hosted on The Talking Dead, which I have watched for a little while when Chris Harrison was out for a little while. So that's the only few things I know her from, but I would love to see more of her.
Yeah, and also a reality show connection. I believe she was a frequent guest co-host on the short-lived Jeff Probst talk show as well. I think she's one of those like secret celebrity survivor super fans.
Okay. All right. I can see that.
What I will add about Cecily that I really appreciated was the constructive feedback that I yes. felt that she was giving on the runway, because it wasn't just, ooh, you know, for sound bites. It was, hey, here, you know, here's how you should say it. If you're going to be this harsh, you know, pretend that you're really sad. You know, not that Valentina listened, but that was really nice to see. I think it would have been fun to have the two of them there, both Yvette and Cecily giving comments, but maybe there was a timing thing where only Cecily could make it. But yeah, I enjoyed both of them as guest judges.
And I think that actually maybe what put Cecily a bit above Yvette in terms of legitimacy when it came to roast stuff is because I believe in 2015, Cecily hosted the White House Press Correspondents' Dinner, which very much is, it's pretty much constructed nowadays as a roast of the sitting president. So it does feel like, even though she just sort of does come from the world of sketch comedy, which is a different type of humor than what we're seeing right now in this challenge, she does have some experience in terms of, you know, writing jokes and especially walking a very fine line between something that is humorous and jovial versus something that, you know, might be considered a bit offensive and overall mean.
Mm-hmm. Oh, before we move on, so I don't know if either of you noticed.
You sounded so like Valley Girl from it. You're like, before we move on.
You guys, I have something I want to talk about. Okay, so Trinity had this super fancy zip-up binder with like all the pockets. I don't know if this is because I was the nerd that was so excited to go school supply shopping, yes. but it was a pretty kick-ass binder, and I was really excited for it, and I was living for it, and I just needed to make that known.
Could you imagine living in a world without Trapper Keepers? Well, let's get into this, because there's a lot of stuff going on here. I will note, I guess, from an overall perspective about the roast, you know, VH1 just posted a video that essentially is a supercut of the three roasts that have been done between season 5, season 9, and All Stars 4. Maybe I'll put it in the show notes. Otherwise, I highly encourage you guys to check it out. It's on VH1's YouTube channel. But I'll admit, watching all those in a row, there are definitely some highlights. I'd say Monet and especially Manila, who I think ran away from this in terms of performance. I will say personally, between those three, it sort of ranks 3 out of 3 for me. You know, when you're comparing this against what in season 5, what Alaska and Jinx and Coco were able to do, or even in season 9 with what Shay and Sasha and Peppermint were doing, this one felt a bit more miss than hit. Before we get into the individual performances and also the pairing with the angelic white runway as well, Brent, what were your overall thoughts about how the roast went?
I agree with you. I thought it was pretty weak. I hadn't watched the supercut when I watched this, and I felt at the time that it was pretty weak. And in fact, at the end of the episode, when RuPaul placed everybody in the bottom who wasn't in the top, I felt like that was in part because there was a twist coming. And number two, because she was annoyed with everybody, that everybody hadn't stepped up their game. There was a little point where, you know, sometimes they pull like little clips from, you know, what's coming up, and they'll put it in a different spot at the beginning of, like, you know, on the next segment of RuPaul's Drag Race, that kind of thing. And there's a point in time where she said, you know, right now, this is the top level of drag. You're doing it right now. Actually, it turned out to be in reference to Trinity's outfit. I thought it was going to be in reference to the fact that they all bombed during the challenge, and she was berating them, going like, right now, you need to step up your game. This is the top level of drag. But no, it wasn't that. But that's how I felt about the overall quality. Even, you know, Manila and Monet, they were good, but they weren't like making me fall out of my seat. It was more like, okay, you were better than the other four. So I wasn't that impressed by really anybody here. I guess you could say I was more impressed by Manila, but I always expected her to do well. I think I was probably the least impressed by Trinity because I expected her to do well, and then she just didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny when Lady Bunny, who is theoretically dead at her own funeral, does better than most of the contestants.
All of the contestants.
Yeah, I thought she was going to be able to pick the lipstick at the end. Just give it to Lady Bunny.
but she doesn't know them. She doesn't know any of them. So who would she pick?
Well, go by the report card, Mike. This is the report card.
I think the reason why this roast just overall was really underwhelming is because the percentage of the contestants that bombed and bombed hard, when you have 50% essentially of the people in the show that just bomb hard, that really just drags down the whole thing. So the fact that Monet and Manila did well, maybe they weren't, you know, the tip top, but they were there. There's no way they could pull up sort of the mess that was happening with three of the other contestants.
Right. I think it's also interesting that, you know, we have had three veritable comedy challenges in a row, but they almost test a different skill set that at this point, I think we now have like a great sketch as to how each queen is as a comedian that maybe we have never seen before. And essentially what we glean from it basically is that Manila Luzon is just fantastic at seemingly any form of comedy.
Yeah, she really is. Yeah.
Yeah. And Trinity is the interesting one for me because it feels like she can do off the cuff stuff really well. But then it seems with anything that's prepared that she has to sort of write ahead of time, that's where she really starts to fall apart. Because I think that when she was succeeding in the Jersey Justice Challenge was when she was having those quick comebacks. It wasn't sort of the prepared material that they had had before. I mean, she almost freaking forgot her own name. And this was a, you know, the perfect example of the written material that just did not come go over well.
Yeah, though I guess I wonder, you know, is that why she succeeded at Caitlyn Jenner as well? I think even Manila says this, you know, yeah, while she's doing of like, was this the same Trinity who just like gave one of Ross Matthews' top 10 snatch game performances ever? To your point, Leon, for as much as we talk about maybe writing things out ahead of time with your snatch game in terms of what you're going to do, I mean, Trinity even says this earlier on in the episode of like, there's a difference between being funny, like written out for a bit, and just being funny. And I feel like Trinity is the latter, which makes her succeed in those off the cuff responses. She's not so much funny with the former. Maybe it's to your point, Brent, like the overthinking. Maybe it's just that she has trouble actually writing things out, but it's a really interesting phenomenon. I totally agree.
I don't know. I think it could be that, or it could be the fact that, you know, in stand-up, it's all, or the roast, it's all on you. Like, the spotlight's literally on you. And every other place where she's succeeded before, it's been in a group setting. So she's able to sort of relax. And when she's not talking, other people are talking. She can take a break. She can mentally, like, okay, what am I going to say next? Or when other people are talking, which is what she's good at comebacks, other people are talking, she has a shady thing to come back and say. So when, you know, Valentina says something, she's like, you know, like the thing during the snatch game. So I really do feel like that's an aspect of this, because in the Jersey Justice thing, she's talking, and then I can't remember who she was paired with.
Valentina,
mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, so Valentina's talking, or Michelle's talking. She has downtime to think about what she's going to say next. In a roast, it's all about you. There is no downtime. It's literally, they said 5 minutes. I couldn't believe it was 5 minutes. I'll say 3 minutes of material where you have to work the crowd, and it's all about Trinity. And there's no downtime. There's no time to think about anything. There's nobody to react out of. I think she would have done better. I guess I'm talking about her performance now, but I'll just say it really quickly. She would have done better if she did the Manila Luzon route and grabbed a few queens besides Bunny and sort of included them in her act. I think that's probably a winning strategy, but I don't know what the hell happened here. This was just such a miss.
Well, let's start with the person who went before Trinity. And again, we'll sort of fold in their roast performance with the angelic white runway of it all. And the Monet Exchange yo-yo has come back up to the finger and not Satan's finger.
Right on cue.
Yeah. So she's able to really deliver here. And I think it makes sense. I think that Trixie and Mayhem Miller were talking to Pit Stop about this. I mean, essentially what Monet was doing and why she seems so lax and just natural is because this is what queens who have all attended her shows say she's the best at, is just banter and making an audience work and making a crowd feel calm. And I think Cecily really nailed that when she said, you know, you had a great string of jokes, but you also were engaged and you were sort of playing off the audience a bit. So I thought that the jokes themselves were pretty good. You know, when she said her original drag name is Methuselah and she's also known at the clinic as Patient Zero, I'm pretty sure that latter joke was, again, watching the supercut, I think Jinx Monsoon might have said that about Michelle Visage as well. But I think that
I didn't know that. Okay, that's good.
But I think that by far, category is Ben Franklin Fuck the Michelin Man might be one of my favorite jokes of the entire roast. On top of that, I liked her ending with, on tour, she wanted to eat a little Mexican. Poor little Valentina didn't stand a chance. Like, I think Cecily was totally right. She had the biggest quantity of jokes, and I will just talk briefly about her runway because, I mean, I don't want to sound sacrilegious, but good God, this was far and away my favorite. I think that this was a really nice take on the angelic white while also standing out and making a character. I love the pop of red. I didn't even get the touches of stigmata until I watched the runway back, like, for the third time. There's just all these small details, it's very intricate and detail-oriented, which you might not say about some of Monet's previous outfits, but I was here completely for the outfit that it almost buoyed her performance in my eyes, where if she didn't deserve to be in the top two beforehand, I felt like she totally deserved it with that outfit alone. Liana, how'd you feel about Monet this week?
Yeah, so first, I guess I'll talk about her outfit. This, I agree with you. This was my favorite of the week. I thought it also looked the most expensive and the most detailed.
Valentina is shook, Liana. Did you know how much she spent on that silk?
Well, okay, oh my God. If that was expensive, she overpaid. Like, ugh, did not like, whatever. Anyway, so back to Monet. I liked the, I loved the pops of red, and her eye makeup was so good and so complimentary to the outfit, but in a not an expected way. So like, much like Jasmine Masters Chen Moonves, expect the unexpected. And that was
what
expect
was the unexpectable,
so
Liana.
Right, sorry. And I liked the Pope hat. That was great. The one thing I will say is she can't really walk down the runway in an angelic fashion.
Yeah.
So it was a little like stumbly, you know, like a kid learning to walk in heels kind of thing. So that was the one drawback.
She walked like a man. That's what she does. You hear me, audience? She walk like a man, but
Brent,
I will say
Brent,
this.
You're just a big fan of the Four Seasons. That's why you're saying that, right?
Look, this is the best she's ever looked. This is great. I love everything about this. This was so well done. I agree with you, Liana. The eye makeup is so great. The contact lenses, the overall look, the juxtaposition of the sort of evil eyes with the angelic white was so great. I do agree with you. I knew there was something about this runway that I didn't like. Then when you said the walk, I'm like, oh my God, it's the walk. It's the walk. I don't know why. She can't walk like a lady. But that's okay. I don't neither can Bianca Del Rio. Who cares? It's a guy in a dress. Cool. You know, whatever.
I was so nervous for her when she walked back on her train.
Yeah.
I thought, oh no. Oh no.
Yeah, this is gonna be another pheromone part two. Do either of you have any thoughts about her performance in the roast at all?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, as you said, certainly the most amount of jokes. And the other thing she has, and I've talked about this before, is she has a great sense of timing with the audience. She had time to, you know, let the jokes land, let the audience laugh. And there are other times where the audience is laughing and she came right back in there with another joke to sort of like let the laughter build on top of itself. It's all about timing in comedy. Anytime you get into a timing kind of thing where people are off and they are like, Trinity was like, her timing was so bad the entire time, then it's just not going to work. And that's where you lose the audience. So that's what I think Monet has over everybody else. It's just a sense of rapport with the audience in a way where they feel like we like you and you're our friend.
The Ben Franklin Michelin Man joke, that was, oh my God, that like sold it for me. I was totally here for that.
Yeah.
I was impressed with her. I thought a great way to kick off the show. So much fun. And then I also have written down in my notes, Henny in all caps. So that must have been the first time that Henny showed up in the audience.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this for a second, because we didn't bring it up last week. Brent, I think you tweeted about this, that Stacey Lee Matthews has essentially become the Where's Waldo of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yes. Did you not know that? I mean, like, they tweeted this out, RuPaul's Drag Race, like, said something about Stacey Lee Matthews, but she was also the court reporter from the week before, and they didn't say boo about it, and she was also the queen in the girl groups from the week before that, in week two, I lose track at this point. Anyway, like, she's everywhere. I guarantee you she's going to be somewhere next week. And I love the fact that, like, basically she was just somebody in the crowd who was taking a picture. Did they even put her name on the board? I don't think they did.
Haven't since she was on. And the weird thing is, because she's always in a solo shot, I'm just wondering if they did the girl group thing and they said, okay, Stacey, we're going to do a bunch of challenges after this. Here, get in this stenographer outfit, get in this funeral outfit. And they just did a whole day where they just filmed footage of Stacey Lane Matthews and all these challenges, because she isn't interacting with anyone else whatsoever.
Yeah, so they don't have to pay her for more than one day.
Yeah, there we go. Basically.
Yeah. That's actually a great point, because now I'm thinking back to the Jersey Justice Challenge. You don't see her in the wide shot. She's only in those single shots of herself.
Yeah,
so
and here I'd have to look if there was anybody around her. Of course, they could have edited that in as well. So I don't know. Yeah.
Or, but like, you know, they're randos, you know, the people from the audience. So even if they got some like other people,
maybe we can find that out. I think we could find that out.
I'm here for CGI Stacey Lane Matthews personally. But I think it's a really fun Easter egg to sort of track from episode to episode. Or who knows? Maybe Stacey. I thought Stacey Lane Matthews might have been like the key cog of this whole twist-laden machine. It turns out not to be, but it's fun to have her riding sidecar. Brent, you spoke a bit before about Trinity's performance, a comedy performance so ugly it made us all vegetarians, which still doesn't make sense. I'm glad that she got rid of that
joke.
Still
doesn't make sense. I don't understand that. And she explained it doesn't make sense.
That was my favorite part, that she explained it. And, you know, Cecily and the audience are just like, wait, what?
Oh, my God. So, I mean, Leon, what did you think about Trinity's performance here? And also her runway, which I would say, if there isn't a, if there wasn't a bottom four and just a bottom two, I think you could argue it might pull her out of it, considering it receives high commendations from the judges, specifically Ross saying, you are now the person that I watch the runways for every week.
Well, so I think in terms of her runway look, I liked it. I thought it was a little, well, I don't know. I missed the angelic part of the white theme. So I was like, God, why are they all doing these types of outfits? But I thought, I don't know. I thought it looked fine. I thought this is something that I totally, I can't remember who it was, Cecily, who maybe said this. Like, this is the outfit I would want to wear for Halloween for sure. But it didn't really look cheap. So that was nice. But oh man. I want Brent to just play the clip. Where are the jokes? Because where are the jokes? Not only were there no content, also the delivery was off, the timing was wrong, and trying to, it just really didn't work. I mean, I was sad watching her do this. I felt uncomfortable for her.
This is where you tweet out, I sad.
I sad. I expected more, Trinity.
Yeah, I know. Well, we got to play it. So, yeah, exactly. Where are the jokes, honey? I mean, and the jokes were there, but it was all about her. I think the jokes were partially there. It was all about her stilted delivery. And she looked scared. She looked like she didn't want to be there. She looked like she wanted to be anywhere but that stage. And the audience can feel that. We can feel that watching at home. I felt uncomfortable watching her. I wanted to fast forward through this section because I felt like, oh, God, she's going to bomb. She's going to bomb. And I don't want to watch her bomb. I want to root for her. She never let us. It's like the opposite of Monet. Whereas Monet lets the audience in, she's your friend, you want to root for her. With Trinity, there was nothing there. There was nothing. There was no warmth. There was no funness coming from her. I don't know how to explain it, but it was almost like there was a wall between her and the audience, and by extension, the judges. And with her stilted delivery and her bad sense of timing, everything just failed. I really do feel like of the six people on the stage, I think she was probably the worst in terms of the challenge, even worse than Naomi. I mean, it's close, but at least I felt like Naomi at least had a joke or two, whereas I never felt like Trinity had anything. And I don't feel like this, to me, this is a challenge all about the roast. And so unless your runway is, oh my God, out of this world spectacular, then I'm not going to give it much credit. And I'm kind of with Liana. I do think that the outfit looks expensive and that's what elevates it. But there is something about it that does seem like, okay, that's lovely and that's nice. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't wowed by it. And I think there are people out there who are wowed by it, and I take their point, but I personally wasn't.
Yeah, I think to your point, Brent, it felt like, whereas Monet sort of felt like she was just naturally talking, Trinity felt like she was reading jokes. And I think that's sort of the difference.
Yeah.
It's the difference between like getting up and doing stand-up and just sort of like feeling at ease versus somebody coming in with a stack of index cards being like, I'm going to try out some jokes from you all. A Serbian walks into a bar and you can just sort of like feel that inherent disconnect because you feel like they're not necessarily coming from an authentic.
She's not present.
Place.
Yeah.
Yes,
she
exactly.
wasn't present in the moment. Yeah.
Yeah. And the outfit, I probably enjoyed it more than you two did. Again, it wasn't my favorite. I think my favorite part actually was the unique inclusion of the halo, which I didn't even see the first time. Maybe it's because of that crazy runway lighting that we were talking about last week, but it wasn't until she was standing still that I actually saw it, that sort of accentuated the headpiece for me, because the headpiece, a lot of these queens are going to go with varying results for this headpiece of, you know, putting feathers along the side, and they worked, you know, to varying degrees. And I think, I forget if it was Mayhem and Trixie might have talked about this, but I think her outfit is comparable to Manila's in a way, but I will say I think I enjoy it. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, this looks better than Manila's to me. Manila's look like Manila's look like
more.
A costume. This to me looked very expensive. So I'll give Trinity. I'm not trying to downplay her outfit. I think her outfit is great. I think I like it. The eye makeup is wonderful. The headpiece is strong. The hair is gorgeous. It fits perfectly. And this sort of this sort of pluming outfit could look big on her, and it does not. And, you know, the bracelets, everything looks rich. It looks expensive. All of that's great. It just, again, it's all, to me, it's all about the challenge. This didn't wow me. It's just like, to me, I expect this from Trinity, and that's why I felt like it succeeded.
All right, so we got one who did well, one not so much. Let's talk about somebody who I felt was a bit middle of the road this week by comparison to the good and the bad. Liana, what'd you think about Monique Hart this week, both in the eulogy and on the runway?
Yeah, so I was actually, when Rue said that the four, you know, if you're not in the top two, you're up for elimination. And I thought that Monique was somebody who stood out from the other three. Like, I could see Valentina, Trinity, and Naomi all being in the bottom, but I thought that that was totally unfair to Monique. So I got her point later when she was talking about, I definitely don't deserve to be here or don't deserve to go home, because I thought that she did a decent job. She brought the energy back up in the roast, you know, from coming after Trinity. I mean, that's rough. I think my favorite joke of hers was the Jonah and the whale joke, but then she added the sperm whale part at the end. And I was like, oh, okay, this is funny. I could see it being overbearing if you're there with sort of the personality character that she was doing, but I thought that it was a great move for her. And I enjoyed her. You know, was it, you know, laugh out loud funny? No, but I was entertained by it. And then her runway look, I actually really like it. And I like the, would she say they were fans?
Blinds.
Or something? Blinds. Yeah, the blinds that she included. I thought that was really cool. The only thing I wanted to do was just yank that piece of fabric off from the part that she, it seemed like she was sort of tripping on it or something. I don't know. I hated that piece of fabric at the bottom underneath her skirt. If I could have yanked that off, I think I would have liked the outfit more overall.
Well, I think this is, again, one of the best times she's been on the runway for me in terms of the outfit. I really love this look. She looks so feminine and so sweet. I mean, everything. I mean, she, you know, she has tattoos on her arms, but they almost become part of the work of art that she is on the runway. I never would have guessed that those are blinds. I love it. She's crafty queen, stunning. So her eye makeup is great. I love the fact that this time her highlighter is working for her. So, you know, we've talked about her highlighter in the past. This highlighter, again, it's particularly heavy, and you could see that, you know, her face looks a little whited out comparatively to the other queens, but because of the outfit and the sheer whiteness of the outfit, her face doesn't look as white to me, and it comes off looking appropriate. So I feel like her runway was a big success, and I do concur with Liana that of the other contestants who were in the bottom, I felt like the one person who deserved to be safe was probably Monique. Well, actually, not probably, was Monique. I think that the thing that probably got her in trouble was the fact that she did a character and she did that same tone the entire time. I think that was particularly grating in the room. If she had just, like, there are times where I get going on a like a Big Brother podcast, or even here, you know, for that matter, and I'm like, oh God, I've been keeping the same tone for the past like 45 seconds. I need to bring it back down. I need to let people breathe for a second. You know, I just need to stop for a second and just like change it up for a moment to let people process what you're giving them. And I feel like that by her doing this character the entire time with that same tone and that same vocal range, it became a little bit grating in the room, and that's what probably pulled her down. But overall, I think she did really well, and she was totally comfortable on the roast, whereas other people were, I think, stunned by being in that position, you know, that it was all about them, where I feel like I never felt like she didn't want to be there, and that made me feel much more comfortable with her.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, embodying a character is always going to, at least in my opinion, produce a mixed success. We've seen that so far with Coco, who won the challenge, and Nina Bonina Brown. God, watching the supercut just reminded me of the horrible painted-on glasses that she wore when she was Nina Bonina Brown's, like, aunt grandma or something. But both are now doing pretty well, because I think that you can sometimes mask jokes that don't necessarily work when being said by the queen proper behind a character. There's something about this idea of delivery that can certainly punch up some jokes. And I think that Monique did have that energy. I don't know if it was this idea of it being grating. It might have become more so droning to the point that you're making, Brent, where it's, if every joke sounds like this, it doesn't matter what you're saying. I could say, talk about the Declaration of Independence, it wouldn't matter. Like, it's basically like, if you just keep doing the same thing over and over again, eventually the audience is just going to tune out and pay more attention to the melody than the words. And so I think that sort of was a bit of a negative in Monique's column, which stinks because, like Michelle was saying, I think she had some good jokes in there. I like the Jonah and the Whale stuff too, but I think my favorite might have been E-I-E-I-Ho. And I wish she had more of that play with the audience, because that's what Monet was really able to benefit from. But that being said, I think her energy totally buoyed her performance. She was a definitive third place for me, and I think she totally was just in the bottom four by default, and I think that's why she was totally like, I don't really need to speak my case. I'm totally fine, because I know that, you know, my resume speaks for itself. I'm a bit more down on the outfit than you two are, just because I feel like, for me, there's a lot going on. Like, just between the differing fabrics with the blinds, I wasn't sure the purpose of the blinds. They don't necessarily feel like they match with the fabric, but I mean, my eyes were just drawn to, I agree that I think her makeup's great. Cecily says her face looks beautiful, but my eyes were just drawn towards the giant ass heart that she has going across her chest, which I still don't understand. I understand that you're Monique Hart and this girl is all about branding, successfully so, but like,
that's what it is.
It just, I don't know. It stuck out to me, not necessarily in a great way.
No, she's a video game character. That's what she is. And she looks like she will kill you. And then the heart like comes off as an accessory and she uses it as a weapon or something.
What video games are you playing?
The best ones, obviously.
This is like me and the figure skating. I was waiting for Mike to say, what the hell are you talking about?
No, that's totally what she looks like. Like, this could definitely be RPG armor, and I'm here for it. Okay, Mike, you're wrong. I'm sorry.
All right, well, now that we've decided that, let's move into the back half, to someone who's known more so for her bottom half. Naomi Smalls had been doing so well up to this point. Safe. A bit of a bump in the road here for Miss Smalls, that it turns out that she was able to recover from a Snatch Game snafu last time, but roasting might not necessarily be her thing, but she does wow on the runway with her ode to Prince. Brent, what did you think about Naomi this week?
Like I said, I felt like she had a couple jokes, but they were delivered badly, and Monet had it right when she was like, the fact that she keeps laughing at her own awkwardness is what's making me feel even more awkward for her. Like, girl, that just makes it worse. Boy, talk about somebody who did not want to be there. That's the problem with this performance. You felt like she was in over her head from the start. And I was so disappointed by this, because I had started to get on board the Naomi train. I'll tell you this, going into this episode, and you could feel it in the podcast last week, I started to believe that she could win, and I never felt that way before. I started to believe, even though she hadn't been in the top two, I started to believe that there was a path for her to win this, that she's just good at everything. Like, there's nothing she's weak at, and that's going to carry her to the crown. I really felt like that, because I know that WoW liked her. That's the company that presents RuPaul's Drag Race. WoW presents on the YouTube channel that she's done work for. RuPaul likes her. The people on the tour like her. Everything about it, I thought it was working in her favor. And my God, she came out and laid a freaking egg this time. What the hell happened with this? Like, I know she's funnier than this. I even felt like when she was with Cecily, she was more in her element. She was more grounded, more present. And then when she got out on the runway with the lights and the judges, it just all fell apart. I mean, this is one of those instances where it was so bad on the runway, I don't even really feel like giving her much credit for the walk on the runway in terms of the outfit, because this feels very on brand for me. I have to believe that she's worn this somewhere before. It's all about her legs and this outfit. That's all it's about. And, you know, anything about Naomi and legs, maybe it's unfair of me, but I don't want to give her as much credit for it, because I feel like that's all I see from her. Like, she, again, I go back to this first episode. She came into this saying, you know what? I want to be somebody other than a model / posing queen. Well, then don't come down the runway with, you know, all of your legs showing, because that's all we remember about you from the first time. And yet that's all this outfit really was about. So I think she earned her place in the bottom, and she's lucky there was no elimination, because I have to believe at least one of those queens pulled her lipstick.
How dare you? Don't you remember Prince was known for showing leg? This is just a very accurate tribute. I can totally see this being an outfit that she's worn before, and then, you know, sort of be like, oh, but I could do it as Prince. And so then I'm going to add the accessories that make this very Prince-like. I mean, I will say I really liked the guitar addition. I thought that was a cool note, and I thought it was a neat take on the Angelic White, but yeah, it definitely falls under a little bit of the predictable category for me when it comes to Naomi, because of the way it was cut and because it was a lot of leg. I also absolutely co-sign this fact that she seems so much better. No, I mean, okay, maybe not so much better, but I thought, okay, she'll be safe. She'll be, you know, safe again when I saw her out on the runway with Cecily during the practice time. And then when she actually got out there during the roast, it was kind of, oh my gosh, I just felt bad for her. And I think maybe this is, oh, she messed up the first little bit and then kind of gets in her own head and then it just spirals, especially the laughing at her own jokes and just really not wanting to be there. But I did watch a little bit of the supercut.
I know what you're going to say. Go ahead.
The first joke from Alaska.
Yes.
Was RuPaul has been in the industry a long, long, long time. And Naomi's first joke was old, 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 old. And those two were edited very differently and came across very differently.
Yes, that's exactly what I thought. That's exactly when you said that, I'm like, when you talk about Supercut, I'm like, oh my God, I know what she's going to say. Because the minute I heard, because I had forgotten that this happened, Alaska does, you know, RuPaul, you've been in the business a long, 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 long time. You know, like, I mean, and she does it with like different octaves and different changes in a way that makes me laugh. And her whole shtick worked, Alaska, I'm talking about, in season 5. So fast forward to here now, and this was just, oh, it was so awkward. And I wanted her, like, just stop saying old. Stop saying it. Don't say it one more time. I wanted her to stop.
Well, it's because, to your point about the musicality of it, Brent, and this is getting, like, super technical, but instead of varying around doing different colors of it, she went, like, old, 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 old man river. Like, basically, just like, yeah, like going, just going down the scale. And I understand the intentions behind it. To the point about the editing, it is super interesting that to me, at least from my perspective, she's the only one who got like the sound effects too. I don't know if you guys noticed this, where after her Nintendo 64 joke, she got crickets. And then when she did the, you know, Rue, you and Lady Bunny went to the same woodchuck to get your teeth done. That's where you go in 1832. Actually, the shade sound effect happened, which I thought was super interesting, even though I think that was her strongest joke, personally.
Yeah. I actually forgot about that one, because then there was another joke that I remember from the Supercut. I don't remember who it was, but, like, she's so old, her colostomy bag is made of wood, or something like that. That, So, I don't know. Yeah. It's the delivery, I'm sure, with Naomi.
Yeah, I'll admit, you know, it took me a couple of minutes to connect, you know, the prince to the angelic of it all, just because that's not necessarily what I remember Prince for. And when that happens, I thought it was a bit simple, but I guess she had to like embellish the white, and the white is not necessarily what Prince is known for, though he does sort of have the ruffled shirt. I thought it was a fine look. I wanted to see more. I'm seeing your point that, like, I think her legs are impressive. We've seen a lot of them. It would have been nice to have maybe some other accessories or something to sort of highlight the bottom just besides showing her legs, but I'll admire the creativity here. You know, everyone else was going for, with the exception of Monet, was going for more of the literal, like, Xanadu-esque Greek goddess that exists up in heaven. And I'll commend Naomi here for going at least off the beaten path a bit.
That's fair. That's fair. And her makeup is well done. And I love the fact that she almost looks like a guy. Like, it's a very androgynous, non-binary look. And I think that should be given credit. But like I said, it's hard for me to look beyond the legs.
All right. Well, let's move on here to Valentina. I mean, I guess we can call this, and we can put this entire roast in our weekly thing of Valentina, what the fuck are you doing? Just because this is just bananas. And Valentina feels like she got laughs. And as they said many times, perhaps it was laughs for things that she didn't necessarily mean. If you look on that supercut and you see the first time she did the roast, that was very much the case, where she was doing this weird, like, reading where she mispronounced her name and was reading all these really, like, just crass things, but was somehow coming across as really funny. So maybe she thought she could try to make lightning strike twice here. No offense to Ben Franklin and the Michelin Man. This was, as Trinity said, a car accident that you can't help but look away from. Liana, give me all your thoughts about Valentina, both in the eulogy and on the runway.
Oh my God, I'm sorry. I can't talk about Valentina if we don't start with the glasses bit.
Oh my God.
Because, okay, so she starts with the "I'd like to keep it on, please" joke. Okay, all right. And then Rue, making a joke herself, calls her out on it. She pulls the glasses off. She has no eye makeup. I thought that was totally part of the gag. Or something like, you know, oh, she didn't know the words, you know, when she did her lip sync. And so she didn't have her eye makeup. I don't know. Maybe I was trying to give Valentina more credit. But then turns out what? She just ran out of time.
Yeah.
Doing her makeup.
I think so. And, this is something that Valentina has been able to outrun since the very beginning. We talked about this in our season 9 preview, even about how Valentina said she'll have a tough time getting ready under the time stipulations that come with the competition. And she's been able to put out pretty damn good looks in her, you know, 1.5 seasons on Drag Race so far, but I feel like she finally got caught here, where just between coming up with this fantastic bit of comedy and doing her makeup, she just had to sacrifice one or app over the other, and that's why she put the sunglasses on.
Yeah, but I thought, I don't know. It's like, if you do run out of time, we'll work it into a gag somehow. I don't know, or something. The only thing I can think about with Valentina's roast, apart from the fact that she didn't have eye makeup on, was the finger up the butt. Because just when that happened, it's like, what the fuck is going on? That's totally why I resonated with, oh, this is a car wreck that you still want to watch. And are they laughing with you or laughing at you? And she really didn't follow any of the suggestions, it seemed, that were given to her. So I can't say, oh, you took in the criticism and then tried to make an effort. It was like, no, you just went with your crazy, weird thing that you were going to do anyway and ran out of time to paint your eyes. So what was this? I have no idea. And then her runway look, I will say her makeup looks gorgeous. The hair looks lovely. I did not like this dress. I didn't really get it, maybe, with the rope with the feathers. It was almost like there weren't enough feathers, or there were too many feathers. I'm not quite sure what was going on. And then I thought it was really ill-fitting, especially in the top.
Yeah, I agree.
So when she said that it was expensive, I was like,
Ask for your money back.
Yeah, exactly. You should get a refund on that, because that was not great.
Okay, so let me get the runway out of the way first. I probably responded better to it. I did think she looked gorgeous, and I thought her eye makeup was well done. Her hair looked great. I agree with you that it's a little bit ill-fitting, and the dress itself is a little bit awkward, but I think the fact that she was living her best life out there walking the runway probably elevated it a little bit in my eyes. But I do concur with you that there's something awkward about the dress, and I can't put my finger on exactly what it is. Maybe it's the weird knots at different places that I don't feel like they're... Like, I get the knot at the top around the bosom, and even the knot around the stomach, but the weird knots around, like, the sides and everything, I feel like having, like, big bulges here and there don't exactly make you look good, and the dress does look like it fits badly. Okay, so the performance in the roast. I am having a bit of trouble here because she made me laugh, and the judges were laughing. And you're like, well, okay, but are they laughing because you meant to make them laugh, or are they laughing just because you were being you and your normal crazy self? But there were elements of Monique and Monet and everybody else who I feel like we were laughing with them because of they're just naturally funny. And we want to like them, and they make us laugh with the crazy things that they do on stage. Half of Alyssa Edwards' whole shtick is the fact that we just love her, and because of her natural personality, which, oh, by the way, not everybody has, and thus I feel like should be getting credit for it, Valentina, to me, was a winner here. And I don't mean winner overall. I just mean that I felt like she was far and above the people who I viewed in the bottom two, which was Trinity and Naomi. Valentina made me laugh. I also never really felt like it was awkward out there with her. I felt like she wanted to be there. I felt like she was the star of the show. The whole thing with the eye bit. I mean, they can ask her whatever she wants after the fact. During the challenge, it worked because I felt like it was part of the gag. And I laughed at that. I'm like, oh, she purposely doesn't have her eyes done because of the fact that she just, you know, she was going to plan on keeping her sunglasses on the entire time. Otherwise, why would she have asked RuPaul, can I keep it on? Because if you don't want RuPaul to say, no, take it off because you don't have eye makeup on, then don't ask RuPaul. So again, I felt like this was a little bit of like hindsight judging. Like, okay, yeah, we laughed at the time and yeah, the bit was funny. Oh, but apparently you didn't mean to not have eyelashes not on, and oh, by the way, we laughed, but we weren't laughing at the things we were supposed to be laughing at, so we're not going to give you as much credit. I was in Valentina's camp on this one, and I'm curious what you think, Mike.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's sort of like, you know, I think, you know, working in like the underground comedy scene for a couple of years, it's sort of this idea of like, hey, if you get a laugh, you get a laugh. And I think that they are sort of, I don't know, splitting hairs sometimes in terms of like, what are you laughing at? And you do make a good point with like the Alyssa Edwards of it all, that one of the reasons why Alaska picked Alyssa in that, you know, that comedy comeback competition in All Stars 2 was because, hey, you know, basically Alyssa's just going to be her complete ridiculous self and everybody's going to love it. And I think that actually when Valentina does her best in terms of these past three challenges was when she was just sort of like embodying a character and just sort of speaking off the cuff. And I wonder if, to your point earlier, Liana, when it talks about like Trinity having a problem with pre-preparing things and writing things down, maybe Valentina's suffering from the same thing as well. Even though she admits she's not a comedy queen, she's a star queen. I don't want to do like a backseat comedy writer thing, but I do wonder if a couple of solutions to the sunglasses thing could have been A, like not even doing your eyes, just taking a handful of mascara and just smearing it on your face. You know, a bit of like what Trinity did. Or B, pull a Monet, put sunglasses under your glasses so that when you take them off, there's still a pair on. Like, I think that could be, granted Monet did it and it could be a little Sasha Velour-esque, but I think that that could be a fun way to do it. You know, I will say, I think I do sort of dock her points for not necessarily taking Cecily's advice when Cecily said, hey, don't start by calling Lady Bunny an inbred pig in a wig. And that's like the first thing she says. It's like, oh boy. Okay. You're just going to barrel through that. Though I think now she sort of did it with a smile. So she thought, okay, if I'm nice about it, maybe it'll like endear me more to them. I was confused by this last joke. Lady Bunny is such a whore. Her sphincter ripped and she's been using her dentureless gums ever since. What does that mean?
I don't know, but I laughed my ass off at it. I don't know, but I laughed at it. I did. It was funny. This is why I have a problem with this. And I mean, you know, she ultimately wasn't eliminated because of it. But I was kind of like, okay, so you came out here and you got a lot of awkward pauses and you didn't get jokes and people didn't laugh at you. But somehow you think you're better than the bitch who went out there and maybe didn't have as many jokes, but they laughed their ass off at her. And she didn't have her eye makeup done, but oh, we laughed at that anyway. I mean, like, how are you deciding who gets credit? She went out there, she got a laugh. Period. That's it. I'm a little annoyed with this.
I will explain the sphincter dentureless gums joke. I believe it has to do with, you know, so the sphincter is the ring of muscles that surrounds your, I mean, well, multiple things, but like your anus. Specifically.
Oh, yeah, we know that. Okay.
Oh, but then she's using her mouth and her dentureless gums to apply the pressure to the penis that she is taking because she can't apply pressure from her sphincter.
I thought for some reason my perverted mind was like, did she remove her gums and put them on her ass? Like, what is this? Because I wouldn't put it past Valentino. Like, think about that.
No, she can't take it in the butt no more. She just got to use her mouth and, you know, because she's old.
And in terms of the outfit, I really like the bottom half, actually, because I like this sort of dynamic of, like, I don't know, an angel caught in a net almost is what came to mind for me with the knots of this crystal rope and the feathers coming out. But I feel like the top half was a bit of a different story. And I think that sort of leads to the disparity overall is that there's just two different patterns going on, that it's a tale of two cities. And I totally agree that the top didn't seem to fit. And I don't know if that was purposeful or not. She looked gorgeous as always. And I think Michelle made a great point that, like, I think she got a very good runway in that white and gold to just like naturally complement her skin tone. But I would say from the dress itself, it was not my personal favorite of hers. But let's move on to brighter pastures on both fronts. Let's talk about Manila Luzon. In the pit stop, Trixie and Mayhem have said that Manila might have given the best roast performance in Drag Race history. Liana, is this more All Stars 4 hyperbole?
Yeah, I think it's All Stars 4 hyperbole. I mean, I didn't get to finish the recap or the, you know, the supercut of all the roasts. But, you know, I mean, this was fun. This was funny. I think she did the right thing by throwing jokes at other people as well. You know, it's not just a roast about Lady Bunny. You can throw a joke at Michelle or, you know, some of the other queens as well. I thought that was good. I liked her April carry-on umbrella thing that she walked out with and then recoiled. You know, so she had a lot of sort of different gags all in there, you know, between the umbrella, just sort of the, I don't know, traditional stand-up jokes that she was telling. And then also with the whole prop will, and then using that as then another avenue to tell more jokes and to put it within a different context. It's not just me standing up here, you know, telling jokes. It's like, oh, this is within the context of Lady Bunny's will, so you can throw jokes at other people and Lady Bunny. So I liked it. I thought it was good. I thought it was really well-rounded in the sense that she was able to come at it from different angles and I didn't get bored, but I don't think it was one of the best roasts of all time.
Mm-hmm. What did you think about the runway?
Oh, yeah, the runway. Oh, yeah, this totally looks like something that I would get on Halloween and then drunkenly stumble home in and get all dirty. So, it did look like a costume. I thought it was fine. I don't think it was enough to, like, knock her out of the top for sure. But I thought that she has these little angel cherub mm-hmm. things sort of, like, stuck to her waist, which I was like, oh, you got that from Michaels. You spray painted it gold and you just stuck them on there. That's how I felt. But, you know, I disagreed with the judges' critiques. I was like, oh, well, the shoes elevate it to being so much more expensive. I was like, oh, okay. So the shoes you got at JCPenney?
It's because the shoes are elevated, Liana. They're platforms. They're so
literally.
Yeah, they're
elevated.
Literally lifts. Exactly. Yeah, I agree. I concur with you about the outfit. I didn't understand the praise this was getting. This looked cheap to me. This really did. It looked like a Halloween costume. It really did. Mm-hmm. Like, I could see, and I think somebody even compared it and said, oh, well, it goes beyond that because of the hair or because of the shoe. No, it's a Halloween costume. That's exactly what it looks like here. So let's not give her more credit than she deserves. But I will give her credit for the roast. She was really, really strong, and she seemed to have a great sense of timing. The audience liked her. She had some jokes. She had an ending. She knew what to do. Like, she never rushed. It's so easy, Mike. I know you know this. Like, when you're coming out there and you're by yourself to walk in on the runway, she took her time walking down there with that umbrella. She got the timing right with the look and the, you know, like I can't remember what you call that, but there's a
recoiling. Recoiling?
Yeah, something like that. There's a word. I feel like there's a comedy word for it, or a double take where she, you're like, oh my God, you know, and then, you know, then walks over to the podium and begins and has a clear sense of self and presentness where the audience feels like they're her friend. I really, really felt like this was so strong. I wouldn't call it one of the best challenges of all time in terms of roast, mainly because there was never really a point where I laughed out loud hilariously. There were some really funny moments and I felt great about her performance, but overall I thought it was just A-, not A+. So there we are.
I think what benefited Manila really well is that she had a beginning, middle, and end, which is tough to do when it comes to like pseudo stand-up, which is sort of what this roast is, in terms of like, you really need to sort of put the puzzle pieces in as to like what's going to flow into what and what's going to work the best. But you know, she came out, she had that bit. I did love the recoiling. It was just a nice bit of physical comedy that honestly was funnier than like the bottom three's performances combined, to be quite honest, in my opinion. It just, that one look just garnered so much fun from it and really brought the crowd's energy up, that she was able to, you know, go into this over the top thing of, you know, delivery. And there were some fun jokes in the beginning. I think by far maybe one of my favorite jokes of her entire thing was, you know, when the doctors performed the autopsy on Lady Bunny, they found she was full of semen in the aircraft carrier that they served on. I thought that was just a really fun take on, like, she's bigger and she's a whore. Like, let's sort of make it a two-for-one. The changing of Lady Bunny's last will and testicle, I thought was a nice little detail. And I totally agree. One of my favorite things about roasts are when the people get up to the dais, they don't necessarily, they'll roast, you know, the main person who is the center of the roast, but they'll also roast their fellow panelists there. And I feel like, you know, while Trinity made references to it and Monet made references to, they both made references to Valentina, Manila was the only one to really like go down the line, not only with the judges, but with the fellow queens as well. And there were some really fun things here. Trinity and Monique both poked fun at, you know, their aesthetic. Valentina, she called ICE and they're waiting for you after the service. It might have been one of the best jokes of the entire thing. And I think the ending on, you know, this is Lady Bunny's obituary or obituary, I think was just it was like a fun little poke at the end. So I think that it was just so structured so, so well that this was far and away the best one. Maybe I'll put it in like, you know, I talked about like the other six queens that I really liked. I'd say maybe just by default, like the top seven or at least top 10 of roast performances we've seen on the show. But it was definitely, with the exception of Monet and Monique, the best of a bad bunch.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
All right. So let's move on here. As we talked about before, Monet and Manila are in the top two. Everyone else is in the bottom. I would love, especially in this latter section of the episode, to sort of track all of our thoughts of what was going on in the moment. Brent, did you feel like there was going to be some sort of shenanigans going on when there was a bottom four? Nobody was safe.
Yeah, I did, because I remember, but I will say it's mainly because I knew that I had seen the promos for this episode, mm-hmm. which is that there was a RuPaul at some point saying that All-Star rules are suspended, and we hadn't gotten that yet. So I'm like, okay, why is everybody who did, like, again, I go back to Monique. I feel like Monique, and I even
kind of Valentina. I feel like they did well, and I feel like they should not be in the bottom. I feel like they should not be in the bottom, and everybody was. And I agreed with Monique in that her sort of amazement at the fact that she felt like she did pretty well and got some laughs and did great on the runway, and yet somehow she's in the bottom and up for elimination, and Manila could potentially pull her card. I mean, I think I kind of agreed with that. So I did sense that there was something going on. I did not ultimately sense what ultimately happened. That's the part that I was a little face cracked about.
So I think for me, I would totally agree with the fact that I knew based on the promo, like what Brent said, that All Stars rules were suspended. Well, they shouldn't have said that in the promo, because then I was like, oh, well, it doesn't matter. I just thought this was going to be a non-elimination. I didn't think, oh, there's going to be something now with like the queens returning and RuPaul saying, you know, oh, All Stars rules are suspended, until further notice. Like that was at least something new. But I felt it was like, oh, you're going to throw the, you know, all four in the bottom and then no one's going to go home. You know, I don't know. I guess once that happened, all four, I was like, oh, no one's going home. And then I was just like, whatever, the rest of the episode, who cares?
Well, let's talk about some of the stuff that happens in the rest of this episode, because it is interesting, though. I do agree, because we had also talked about, like, if the season plans out where one queen's eliminated every episode and you have eight episodes, how is that going to work? So we figured maybe one of the things that would happen last week is that there would be a non-elimination episode. I do want to speak about Valentina again, because I would love to ask you guys, though there's a lot of talk amongst these other queens about Valentina's delusion. And I wonder, now that we've seen her for five episodes on this season specifically, what percentage of Valentina do you think, you know, does sort of have this inflated sense about herself that doesn't necessarily line up with the reality? And how much do you think is, we talked about her sort of playing up this character, the telenovela of it all. Which side do you think is dominating more? Do you think it's more of this coach from Survivor-esque, like, I'm the best, even though I'm not necessarily the best? Or do you think it's more, I'm playing a TV character right now, so I'm going to act in this over-the-top way? Brent, what do you think?
I think it's 100% the latter. I think she's totally acting. I think that she's in on the joke. I feel like she knows she's being outrageous. I feel like everything about her says that to me. So I would be shocked if there was really a part of her that, you know, let me say this. I do think that I agree with her, and that I feel like that she is stronger at points than they're giving her credit for. But I feel like that's based in reality, even though some of the other queens think it's based in delusion. I feel like that she is in on the joke. Leanna, what do you think? Are you in agreement with me, or do you feel like it's a mix?
I don't know, because I haven't seen Valentina break from that character. It's just varying levels of ridiculousness, but still the baseline is pretty crazy. So it's hard for me to say, you know, yeah, okay, I do think she's playing it up, but I think at her true core, she is this person. I mean, when she thinks, I truly believe that she thinks she's a star, and she thinks that she has great ideas, and I think she is willing to take criticism, but still, like, just really believes in herself and really thinks that she is all that. And so I don't know. I think she's buying into her own opinion of herself and thinks that she wasn't the worst and didn't deserve to go home either, you know, last week or this week or 2 weeks ago, I guess.
I feel like she was kind of this way on her original season as well, where she was just like, I'm a freaking star, man. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, but I do take your point that maybe there's an element to her. So I don't know. Maybe I'm changing my opinion.
Well, let's also remember last week with the ladies, my blood is boiling, when it's clear that, like, I think she takes umbrage most of the time with when the judges have critiques against her and she doesn't necessarily believe it. She feels like, you know, I made these decisions for a reason and I'm in the right here. And sometimes she isn't, you know, I think that we have defended her Snatch Game performance. Brent, you defended her Rose performance. So I don't think she's necessarily completely in the wrong. I just think it's really interesting how it's being portrayed, considering that we cut to multiple queens in confessional this episode talking about her delusion. Makes me feel like they're trying to tell us that she's delusional and that, as Monique is alluding to, she's going to be in for a swift kick in the bum sometime very soon.
I'm gonna save my question. So let's go ahead. I was gonna ask something, but it has to do with the end of the episode.
Yeah, well, let's get into the lip sync, because yeah, I think there's definitely some stuff to talk about, and I agree it might not necessarily be warranted, but I just thought it was a really interesting sort of like editing beat to talk about. Let's get into the lip sync. Jump to It by Aretha Franklin. It is Manila versus Monet. I don't know if either one of you two thought this, but I actually thought it was going to be a tie. That it ended up being, just because this performance, while it was really spirited and fun, reminded me so much of Benda LaCreme versus Shangela doing I Kissed a Girl last All-Star season, where there was so much interplay between them that it was really hard to distinguish one performance from the other. So I could totally understand, and especially since this sort of ended up being a wash round anyway, of Rue just saying like, yeah, we'll give it both to them. And that being said, I really enjoy both of them. There's this really fun moment that's been posted on the Reddit where once they get into the verse, they actually are on such the same wavelength that they are walking across the stage in sync with each other without even realizing it. Like, it played almost like a choreographed routine between the two, even though they were competing against each other, which I think definitely, boosted my enjoyment of it overall. Liana, what'd you think about the lip sync?
Well, I thought Monet did better.
Me too.
I didn't think it was going to be a tie. I thought it was going to be, I thought Monet was going to win. And then when Rue announced Manila, I was like, well, maybe it was a tie and they, you know, picked the same person. Because I think we saw that on All-Stars 3 mm-hmm. when Chi-Chi went home. But then I was like, nah, it's going to be a non-elimination. So she picked both. And then rules are suspended. La-di-da-di-da. So, yeah.
Did you say Chi-Chi went home?
Yeah, in All-Stars 3.
You mean right? Fifi? Fifi went home?
No, that
Chi-Chi Devane in All Stars.
Well, that happened in All Stars 2 as well, with Alyssa and Tatiana both came back.
Yes, that's what I was thinking of. Yeah, when Alyssa and Tatiana won, and she said they're both a winner, and then like the Roxy Andrews and Fifi O'Hara look at each other with the face crack of the century. That's
right, because they both thought they were going to go. Right.
Yes,
okay,
I thought that's what you're
mm-hmm.
talking about. Yeah.
Oh no. Yes. Okay. Well, Chi-Chi, Fifi, both happened to them.
I forgot about Chi-Chi. I was thinking about Fifi. I'm like, oh well. Anyway. So yeah, I agree with you. I thought that Monet won this. I thought Monet won it, but I take your point, Mike, that the way it was edited, it was presented mm-hmm. in such a way where you could see a tie, but I felt like they were purposely picking elements of Manila that were more funny and like trying to put it up against elements of Monet that were kind of always funny. I don't know. I felt like there were some shenanigans going on here. And when Rue announced Manila as the winner, because I've been right every time. And when Rue announced Manila as the winner, I was like, something's weird's going on. Mm-hmm. And then when she said, Monet, you're also a winner, I'm like, okay, that makes more sense. And then I'm like, well, okay, so what's going on now? So we're going to eliminate two people. But then like the podcast from last week starts going through my mind where Mike's like, okay, in order to get to the end, if we want mm-hmm. four queens at the end, we have to have a non-elimination. So immediately I'm thinking, okay, they can't eliminate two queens here. But so what can they do? I'm not exactly sure what's happening here. I do want to say, this is my question from before, that when she said, you know, you're both a winner, and they pulled the bottom queens back up to the stage and they get ready to announce, you know, who's going to be eliminated. And then RuPaul says that the rules are suspended. I really thought there's no chance in hell that Manila has Valentina's lipstick in her bosom. Mm. I really, really felt that. I think that after she eliminated Latrice, that she's not going to want to piss off the fans any further. And I think the fans love Valentina. I think she has a heart. Like, the people who love Valentina love Valentina. I think people love Valentina. And no other queen who was up for elimination has that kind of ferve behind their fandom. So I think I do not believe that Manila was going to eliminate Valentina here. What do you guys think?
Well, then who do you think she was going to eliminate?
I think she was going to eliminate Naomi. I think she was going to eliminate Naomi because she had never been in the top. And from what I've been hearing on Reddit, and this is what I've been hearing, but I don't know. Again, there's nothing. The show, it's like with the Alaska talks during All-Stars. Even though they all, you know, were together and you knew they were season 5 and they were friends previously, there was never any explicit alliance mentioned there. It was just sort of, you thought there maybe there was something, but they never came out and said it, that there has been rumor of a Monique, Monet, Naomi alliance. And I can see somebody like Manila saying, you know what, I don't want to eliminate Valentina because people are already mad at me for Latrice being up for elimination last week and not going through with that. So I don't want to bring this on myself. So I'm going to pick somebody else. And the person who I'm most threatened by is part of that troika, and that's Naomi. So let's get rid of her. I think she had Naomi in her bosom. We'll see.
Oh my God, the troika.
Yes.
Oh my God, bringing back flashbacks to whenever the challenge was on the air.
Right. Just to be clear, I know that Manila didn't eliminate Latrice. What I'm saying is that I think that after that happened and how much flack she got for not eliminating Latrice, that she's not going to want to eliminate Valentina and get further, you know, people pissed off with her.
I don't know. I so I thought that both of them were maybe going to have Valentina, and then it was going to be like, oh, they both pulled, but then everybody's safe. Like, it was going to be a save of Valentina. Just because, I don't know. So I tried to do this report card nonsense thing, and I tried to assign points to, okay, if you're in the bottom, you know, it's only this many points, but if you win outright, it's this many points. I did the maths, and I calculated that Valentina should have been in the bottom. So based on the math... and Manil's a smart queen. She could do the math. So, just saying.
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing because, I mean, that was the whole point of, like, the post-judges deliberation is that things are just so, I don't know, things were so murky. Specifically, I think, between Valentina and Naomi. I think that, you know, Manila did have a talking head about, like, oh, Trinity's a really big threat. Should I take her out now? I don't think Manila was ever going to do that. But I do wonder if, like, Trinity telling Manila to get rid of Valentina would have stuck in her head as well. Like, I don't think Manila's necessarily wanting to please anybody, but at the same time, if she said that, like, oh, you know, everyone was sort of talking about her and I agreed with them to get rid of Valentina, maybe it's a way to sort of kill two birds with one stone. Because I disagree with what Monet is saying. I still think Valentina is a threat to win this entirely, because I think when she's good, she's really freaking good on this show. And so I think that this could be a way to get rid of another threat. Though I do see your point, Brent, that I think if you're sort of eyeing this alliance game, which they're sort of setting up Manila as doing, or at least being a bit more subjective with her terminology than this quote unquote report card, she could also take a shot across the bow and use the excuse of, well, Naomi hasn't really wowed the judges extremely this season. So I felt, and all the rest of us have at some point. So I feel like she should go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I felt like was going to happen.
So nobody is going to go. For the first time in Drag Race history, All Stars rules are suspended until further notice. And we could talk about what that means, but there's going to be a lot of speculation going on for the rest of this podcast. So everyone walks back. Monet makes a joke that, oh, I guess Rue's done giving away $10,000 every week. When suddenly Lady Bunny appears in the mirror, probably standing on the same mark as Ginger Minj did a couple of years ago. And Monique was spooked. Monique nearly ran away, which is probably how I would respond. I'm not good for startling. So I would not have been as happy to see Lady Bunny. And she tells them to turn around, and there they are, the four eliminated queens, including Pheromone, who is totally dressed incorrectly for a funeral.
Missed the memo.
Brent, you gave us some of your own sound effects, but give me your overall thoughts. Again, we could talk about, I think, our own guesses as to what these returning queens means, but how do you feel that this is the way that we're seeing them?
Fuck off. Seriously. I was so mad that this happened. I mean, we had just gotten through the cannon fodder, and then we had a really tough elimination with Latrice, and it felt right. Like, I felt like this is where the real competition starts. And no offense, but Latrice hadn't done shit. She had the first episode, she was good. After that, she wasn't. She really was, like, trucking along the bottom. So I don't know what to think here. I'm really annoyed at this. I really thought we weren't going to do this. I thought, okay, they were going to take at least one season off. Like, it's like a Big Brother where they continually bring back a juror. They're going to take one season off where they bring back a pre-juror or they don't bring back anybody. You know, they got to keep the audience on their toes. But no, here we are with the tired queens. Now I got to see freaking Pheromone, you know, going over the fact that she obviously should have been eliminated. Gia obviously should have been eliminated. Latrice obviously should have been eliminated. Now we're going to have them come in the workroom. And I, you know, so I didn't even talk about Jasmine Masters. I forgot she was even there. They had a little promo with her. I think they used that from before because I didn't see her in any part of the episode at the end there. What the hell? What are they doing with this? I mean, is this just like, are they just, they could have just had a non-elimination, gone back in the workroom, said you're going to lip sync for your life. All Star rules are permanently or whatever, suspended, temporarily suspended, and fine. Well, and that would have been great, and we would have got to the end, and they could play it out. But now, these other queens are coming back, and you see them walking up to the lipstick box, so I don't know what they're going to do. This is dumb. Again, I went back to the first part of the episode, and I know the editors don't pick this part, so I will not berate them for that. But I feel like the beginning, the editors were treating the audience like they were dumb, and I feel like here, the producers are treating the audience like we're dumb. Like, we don't care about any of this. And not only that, this feels like made-up drama. All of these decisions about who went home they were resolved. I felt good in my heart about the fact that, okay, you know what? Pheromone came out there. She tried. She got one reprieve. She went out there. She tried again. It didn't work out for her. Jasmine Master should have never been there. She wasted her freaking spot. Remember how angry I was during episode one. Gia Gunn, you know, did her best. I felt like she should have been in the top at one point during episode one. Did really, really well. And yet, somehow, nothing else ever came of it. And she really crashed and burned during episode three. She should have gone home. All of these queens should have gone home. There's no reason why any one of these queens needs to come back. I'm really freaking annoyed at this.
So, can with the way that the number of episodes, like the number of episodes that we have left, can we have somebody actually come back?
If they take their place.
So let's talk about this. Let's get into a bit of speculation as well, because I have some thoughts about the twist as well, but I think it can sort of come part and parcel. Because we sort of spurned the discussion along. We got a tweet from PJ last night on Twitter that has caught a little bit of steam with his guess as to what's going to happen. He says, I'm putting this out there. The four eliminated queens are going to lip sync for their life against a bottom queen of their choosing for their spot in the competition. So, Brent, you spoke about how one of the cuts from the promo are, because we do get Ru saying for the first time in Drag Race history and then nothing after that, but we do see the eliminated queens go up the lipstick box. What PJ is suggesting is maybe they're picking the lipstick of a queen who ends up in the bottom for a challenge, who they're going to essentially face off against. And if they win, then they come back into the game and essentially take their spot. Again, when it comes to the timing of it, it's a little awkward because we're going to this episode at 6. I'm going to assume that this season has 8 episodes because the previous 2 All-Star seasons did. I don't think anything was officially announced as to how many episodes it would run, but that's just the assumption I'm making. It might be incorrect, but assuming that we only have 3 episodes left, if we get someone to replace someone else, episode 6 will be left with 6. Episode 5 or episode 7 will then get things down to 5, and we'll have half the competition entering the finale. So again, it's a little strange. So we can speculate about things. I have a personal guess, and it's a little bit of a modification about what PJ sent us. But Liana, do you have any thoughts about that idea?
Yeah. So I was thinking about the math. It's my thing this right. week, and just calculating it out and just saying, okay, well, if somebody comes back, that means we have to have a double elimination if we're going to have 4 in the 8th episode, which is the finale. And so I think that it's going to be some sort of twist where we have the 4 queens come back who are eliminated, and they're not actually vying for a spot back in the competition, but they get an opportunity to send one of the queens home or put them in the bottom. Yeah, or something like that. And so I think that that's actually what the situation is. And I think that this is sort of the take on the jury twist that we saw from All Stars 3, where the returning queens get to still have a say in who moves forward in the competition. But it's not at the end where it's you're eliminating half of, you know, the final 4, which is crazy. So this is a way to get them back in, get them involved, still have some participation, but not have it be, you know, another Shangela type situation.
It could also be something where all 4 of the eliminated queens get to save somebody in the 2 lipsticks that are left are the 2 people who are in the bottom 2 and have to lip sync for their life or something. I don't know. That could be something.
I think as we saw in the promo for next week, it's like the eliminated queens, they're all lined up and then they walk to the box and they pull a lipstick.
Yeah.
So like that's what I see. So I'm trying to think, okay, how does that format then fit into what might happen next week?
Let me read something from the RuPaul's Drag Race Wikia right now. And I'll admit this might be a bit spoilery. So even though we're speculating on a lot, if you want to tune out for the next like couple of minutes or so, if you're, you know, if
BB
you're
is the mole, that's what it is.
Yes.
That's what it turns out to be. But it says here, so the episode's called Lollapalooza. It says, for the first time in Drag Race history, all of the eliminated All-Stars get a chance to return to the competition. But first, they have to send home a competing all-star in a shocking mid-season lip-sync smackdown.
What? So
I think PJ's theory is holding water.
Well, the only person who can come back is Latrice. I mean, and I don't even think she should come back. But, I mean, like, the other 3 are such cannon fodder. Like, come on.
Okay, so Trinity. So let's say they're going to face off against who sent them home. So Trinity would face off against Jasmine. Pheromone would face off against Valentina. Gia would face off against Manila, and Monique would face off against Latrice.
And Naomi Smalls is safe once again.
Yeah.
I was going to say like that would leave a couple people like without somebody who they eliminated. So
Monet and Naomi just chill.
Yeah,
because it's interesting because we sort of do see people in groups. So it's an interest. I thought initially that they were going to work together, sort of like what happened in the All Stars 2 comedy competition. But it does seem like I'm pretty sure this is the main challenge, too.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure it's just going to be like this might just be 4 lip syncs the entire episode. But it's still a weird sort of padding things out, because this is what happened during All Stars 3 as well. They did the bring back challenge in episode 6, and then we had episode 7 and 8 to like not really have much follow up from it. Brent, to go back to what you're saying, Element, I'm going to try to keep my hopes up about this, but I was in total agreement with you when we saw this, just because, you know, you could justify it happening in All Stars 2. It was the first time it had happened, and you had people like Ginger and Tatiana and Alyssa be sent home, arguably maybe when they shouldn't have, or when other people could have been eliminated. So they had chances for revenge. All Stars 3, say what you want to, but you have people who have unfinished business. Morgan McMichaels felt like she was sent home unfairly. Thorgy Thor felt like she was sent home unfairly. Milk felt like she was sent home unfairly. So even though I wasn't a big fan of it, it garnered this ability to have everyone sort of sit around and hash out their issues. Here, there's not a lot going on there. The only thing is that Pheromone was a little upset that Valentina eliminated her. And I guess you could say Latrice was upset that Monique eliminated her, but that's basically it. And so I will admit I'm not going to be that excited to have this be dedicated to like 10 minutes in the beginning of the episode of all the queens sitting around and all the eliminated queens essentially airing their grievances against those who eliminated them.
They're fake grievances. Like, they should not be pissed about this. Pheromone has no... Pheromone was in the bottom of the first episode. Pheromone was in the bottom of the first episode. They all agree that she should have gone home. Why is she bitching about the fact that Valentina had to eliminate her? She had to eliminate her. If she didn't eliminate her, they would have said she was in an alliance together. Shut the fuck up. I'm so sick of this. Like, stop... RuPaul's Drag Race, stop treating the audience like we're dumb. We're not dumb. So mad at this. Ugh.
Liana, do you have any thoughts overall about, you know, I guess tying into the possibility of this twist as well as to what we might be expecting next episode?
I don't know. I mean, I totally agree with Brent. I think I'm on the same page of their storylines are over. And yeah, it definitely feels like, okay, we got through, you know, the riffraff and now we're at the competition. And now we're going to bring them back and we're going to have now potentially some competition between them. I mean, I will be open-minded. I will see what happens. I will try to enjoy it.
I will say this. Yeah. I don't mean to interrupt you, but this is the second time that RuPaul's Drag Race has face-cracked me in the time span of about a month and a half. They did this with the Christmas special, which I still have problems with, when they advertised that they were going to crown somebody, and then they didn't crown anybody, okay? Or they crowned everybody, I guess you could say. And now they're pulling this tomfoolery with this episode when they never gave us nary a hint that anybody was going to come back. And that's what made me feel good about the fact that, you know what, the door is closed on these queens. This is the other thing, Mike, you said the fact that, you know, All Stars 2, All Stars 3, there were reasons why these other queens came back. They were stars. Freaking Ginger Minj, Coco Montrese, they're people you know, people you like. I don't give a shit about freaking Jasmine Masters, Gia Gunn. Pheromone. Who the fuck are these people? Seriously, I don't care about any of them. This is the price. This is, as Rob would say, this is the invoice that RuPaul's going to have to pay, the RuPaul's Drag Race is going to have to pay, for having cannon fodder on the show. If you have actual stars on the show, 10 queens out there who actually can go after the crown, I say what you want about All Stars 2, I felt like every one of those queens could have won. I did. I felt like Coco Montrese was eliminated first. I was stunned. I was stunned she was eliminated first. She was great. I love Coco Montrese on her original season. And coming into that season, I thought, there's a way she could win this. But I never felt that way about Pheromone, Gia Gunn, Jasmine Masters, really even Latrice Royale. Never felt that way. So this is the price you pay for putting cannon fodder on the show, is the fact that we don't give a shit about them now. And that's why it's so dumb to have them back, and why you're treating the audience like we're stupid.
I like that Jasmine Masters' entrance, or her look for the funeral thing. She just sort of took a bunch of tulle and like stuffed it on her head.
Listen, remember what she wore during the holiday challenge?
Exactly. So, this is the evolution.
I think by far my favorite thing from the promo was Jasmine's Expect the Unexpectable, and then this like fade into her sitting in confessional. It's just done so well. It's a fantastic piece of editing. So if anything, I'm excited to see just more random-ass Jasmine Masters on our screen. I feel like Valentina might have taken her spot in terms of just the weird-ass queen who's able to just be funny by doing completely ridiculous things. So maybe they'll have to face off. I'm not entirely sure, but it should be interesting. I mean, we're rounding the back half of All-Stars here, and I'll admit, when I first saw it, I was a little disappointed because I have been loving this season much. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if there was just a non-elimination, like, this is such a strong group of six queens that, like, I would have just loved to see them, you know, take a mulligan on this one and then just move forward. I don't think we necessarily needed to bring someone back just for the drama of it all. There's drama going on already with just... And it seems like from what the bottom four deliberations were sort of alluding to, everyone's kind of on an even playing field where everyone's had good days and everyone's had bad days. So it's going to make the elimination super interesting. I don't want that stalled by the tomfoolery they're about to do.
Yeah.
Well, get ready.
We shall get ready. You know what? I think we're going to grin and bear because we do love RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars. And I'm hopeful that with this season being so good so far, that hopefully they'll stick the landing on whatever the heck is going on here. And feel free to let us know your speculation as to what might be happening next week, your takes on the roast and outfits therein. As well, you can always reach out to us on social media. Brent is at One Lucky Gay, spelled O-N-E. Brent, I know that Celebrity Big Brother is coming up super soon. Are you guys preparing to do any sort of preseason stuff before the premiere?
Well, originally, we were going to do an off-season podcast this coming week, but because we knew that the Celebrity Big Brother announcement was going to come up, we have postponed that, so I'm sure we're going to do something with Celebrity Big Brother once the cast is ultimately dropped. Rumor is, it's supposed to be being dropped on Sunday, I think last year. It was dropped a week before the actual show came on, so maybe Sunday or Monday is when we're going to get something. I think Vegas on Twitter has also said something about Sunday or Monday, so we'll see. I'm excited to see who's in the cast. There's been some rumors. I don't know what to make from it, but I'm not on Celebrity Big Brother, so that's all I know.
All I'm gonna say to that is whoa, that's wild.
I'm pretty sure it's supposed to drop on Sunday. That's what I heard. Okay.
Yeah, so. I believe CBS News officially announced that. So I don't know if it's going to be like, because they announced it during a commercial with the Grammys last year. So I don't know if it'll be like, I don't know, during 60 Minutes or something, or maybe it'll just be online only. But yeah, feel free to check that out, as well as Brent's fantastic Celebrity Big Brother coverage. It's going to be a very fast paced, fun season to sort of get it, shock us our systems to get us back into Big Brother.
If you've ever wanted to try Big Brother before, you really need to try Celebrity Big Brother because it's really great. The episodes move so quick. Every other episode's an elimination. Every other episode's a head of household competition. It moves at the speed of lightning. If you want like just a taste of Big Brother, Celebrity Big Brother's where it's at.
All right, Liana, you can always follow her at Liana Boris. Liana, what do you have in the works? Speaking of, while we move on to 2019, I believe you have a bit of looking back onto 2018 to do.
Yes, that is definitely the case. So I am going to be looking back at Survivor 2018 alongside you, Mike, and Shannon Gates, talking about the five Survivor franchise shows that were on in 2018. And it's, yes, Brent, we did rip you guys off with your Big Brother 2018 recap.
We are the Manila to your Trinity podcast.
Yes.
Exactly. And I'm so excited to get into everything. We have a survey that so many people filled out, ranking their favorite players, best players, the seasons, and all that stuff. So we're going to get into it and really have a really fun, lengthy discussion of all of the amazing Survivor that aired in the year of 2018.
Yeah, maybe by this time next year, depending on how many seasons come out of Drag Race in 2019, maybe we'll do like a Drag Race 2019 in review, considering how many other, there'll be like a 4th of July special, there'll be like Memorial Day mini season. There's a lot of Drag Race to be had, assumingly, this year.
I'm excited for when we cut up All-Stars 4. We can only talk about the back half of All-Stars 4.
Yeah, exactly. What do you think about the last four episodes of All-Stars 4?
I'm reading a comment on Reddit right now. Someone says, can someone explain to me why Stacey Lane keeps popping up? Like, is she a special feature? Was she supposed to be on the show?
Yeah, maybe she was supposed to be like the BB-esque like 11th queen that got brought in, but they didn't have the budget for it. So they just sort of like,
the budget.
You can ride sidecar to this big motorcycle of All-Stars 4.
Stacey Lane and Mayhem Miller have earned their spots for All-Stars 5, Mike.
Yeah, I would love to see. Maybe that's an off-season podcast we can do if there's ever an off-season in Drag Race of casting All-Stars 5. Mm-hmm. You can always follow me at a Mike Bloom type. You can check out the Top Chef podcast I'm doing on reality TV wrap-ups. Wrote a bunch of stuff this week for Parade as well. I got to interview Allison Williams about a series of unfortunate events. I talked some Valley of the Boom, which is a big National Geographic show that's starting up.
tomorrow night. And also I'll be doing some Star Trek Discovery in preparation for the premiere and post-premiere as well on Hollywood Reporter. So be sure to check all of that out. Thank you so much for listening. Let us know your thoughts on social media. We'll be back next week to talk through whatever the heck Rublulupalooza is going to bring in terms of maybe returning queens coming back to the competition. We're not entirely sure, but I'm so excited to keep talking about this fantastic season of television. Thank you all so much for listening. For now, you may sashay away. Bye!